Ohio Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. First case in our calendar is Cleveland Construction, Inc. versus the City of Cincinnati. Mr. Gamulin.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, counsel for Cleveland Construction, I'm Richard Gamulin. Co-counsel is Mary Clark. On behalf of the city solicitor, Julia McNeil, we represent the City of Cincinnati. In a nutshell, if there's no outcome mandated by legislation, in other words, no certain outcome dictated based on fixed criteria, then there's no legitimate claim of entitlement, there's no constitutionally protected property interest, and there can be no procedural due process claim upon which relief can be granted. And really, this case should be extinguished at the very outset. Because the
Council, is it the ordinance, state law, both that require an award of the bid to the lowest and best bid?
The law of the state of Ohio is generally lowest and best. The City of Cincinnati Charter incorporates by reference state law unless there's a conflict with city law. The city procurement code is the lowest and best system.
And then there was the exception or the definition in the ordinance that included this requirement for small business.
Well,
right.
There are multiple layers of discretion, and one of the acts of discretion at the discretion of the procurement agent is whether to use a small business requirement as part of a contract.
And this contractor didn't meet that, but there was a cap on how far you could go of what, 50,000 or 10%?
This contractor did not meet the threshold small business subcontracting requirement of 35% for this drywall
right.
job for the convention center expansion. The interpretation of the city ordinance that Your Honor is alluding to is something the procurement agent only gets to after several layers of discretion. In other words, accepting the bids, having set a small business cap in the first place or threshold of 35%, choosing to rely upon the small business threshold. Those are all acts of discretion. The language in the ordinance itself refers to what the city argues is a discretionary application of a $50,000 disparity between the highest bid and the
and
other
this, bids. And this bid exceeded that by quite a bit.
The
difference.
The award, there were two bidders that satisfied the small business requirement. The bid that was submitted by Cleveland Construction did not. The disparity between the award to Valley and Cleveland Construction exceeded the what we consider again to be a discretionary $50,000 disparity in the city code.
Okay, but you're arguing that you the trial court was even wrong in awarding anything.
Yeah, the mistake made by the lower courts is that they freeze framed this provision in the Cincinnati code that is only reached after many acts of discretion by their procurement agent. Built into any lowest and best system is the inherent discretion, and this is repeated throughout the city code and in the bid itself, that if a bidder does not reach that 35% threshold for small business subcontracting, the bid may be rejected. That's over and above the general requirement in city and state law that any and all bids may be rejected. So there's no guarantee at the outset before any application of law by the city procurement agent that there's a guaranteed certain outcome based on fixed criteria. That's what the Sixth Circuit in the case provided as additional authority referred to. That's the environmental holdings case. Sixth Circuit said there can be no constitutionally protected property interest where the procurement agent reserves discretion to reject any and all bids. That's exactly what we have here with the city procurement scheme.
I want to ask you that because I voted to allow this case, but I thought there was an important legal issue here. But it seems to me that both of you agree that one, a bidding party, doesn't have a constitutional interest or a property interest until either the bid has been awarded and then you lose the bid, or this abuse of discretion issue. But what's the public, what's left really is the argument that the city's ordinance wasn't followed by this 10% $50,000 limit. So clearly wasn't followed by the city. Why is that an issue of public interest to us? That's an issue between the city of Cincinnati and a contractor. We don't know whether any other city has the same provision in its bidding requirements. What's the public interest here?
Your Honor, the city of Cincinnati does not concede that an abuse of discretion then can retroactively become a constitutionally protected property interest that would be subject to procedural due process protections. That's a statement taken from an earlier Sixth Circuit decision. That refers to the conduct of the procurement agent, which then would reference a violation of ordinance, not a violation of the Constitution. The public interest here is that the lower courts, the trial court and the first district, have diluted and expanded what a constitutionally protected property interest is, such that throughout the state of Ohio, there will be many public entities, municipalities, the state of Ohio itself, which filed an amicus brief, school districts, all of which will be subject to an onslaught of procedural due process violations.
Well, I'm not following you on that. The issue here seems to boil down to the issue about which Justice Pfeiffer just questioned you, this provision that Cincinnati has that if you don't meet the 35% SBE requirement, that you can't grant a contract if it's over, 50,000 or 10% more than the lowest bid. That's not a constitutional issue, is it? It's a matter of whether the city of Cincinnati followed its ordinance appropriately and whether it did not. And if it didn't, the consequences of that. I don't see the public interest there for us.
It is an issue of ordinance, Your Honor. The constitutional issue is that the lower courts have converted, transformed an alleged ordinance violation into a constitutional deprivation. Thereby they've broadened the scope of challenges that are going to be raised to
public
procurement.
You're concerned about the Court of Appeals opinion having precedential value, at least in the first district.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely, Your Honor. by contrast, look at the federal food stamp program, which is a classic entitlement program based on fixed income and asset criteria. A person applying for food stamps is guaranteed those food stamps if they satisfy the income and asset criteria. By comparison with the city's procurement program, there is no guaranteed outcome. A person who is submitting a bid for a city procurement contract has no guarantee that the bid is even going to be considered, has no guarantee that it can comply with fixed criteria, because the city code has non-exhaustive criteria, which is the other factor the Sixth Circuit addressed in the environmental holdings case from a few months ago. If a procurement system has non-exhaustive criteria, then there can be no legitimate claim of entitlement. There can be no constitutionally protected property.
Counsel, doesn't that, in practice, render the competitive bidding in Cincinnati illusory? How do you ever get a really competitive bidding situation when the city has virtually complete discretion to reject any bid for any reason?
Well, that is characteristic of lowest and best bidding. This is not a lowest bidding system. In fact, the city ordinance that we've been discussing, which appears at page 45 of Cleveland.
Isn't there some limit to what the discretion could be and still be in compliance with the state statute? Or is this just a system that's sort of taxpayers think it's competitive bidding, but it's not really?
Lowest and best, by definition, means that cost and other qualitative factors will be considered by the decision maker. The government is free to enact a lowest bid system. A few do. City of Cincinnati has not. The state of Ohio has not. Lowest and best connotes quality factors. The ordinance that appears at page 40.
Are you arguing that there's essentially no limit then on the city's discretion as to what constitutes the best part of lowest and best bid?
The city, in its discretion, can choose what is best for city procurement.
Without limit on that discretion.
There's a case decided by this court that's been discussed on brief where I think it was the city of Dayton, announced the criteria upon which it was going to make a decision after the fact. A bid process had occurred. After that bid process occurred, the city then informed the bidder as well. I think you had to reside in the city or some such requirement that was not known. By contrast, here in the case at Barr, this small business subcontracting requirement was enacted by city council. City council established as a municipal priority attracting small business enterprises. There's often a cost trade-off when you use a lot of small business subcontractors. You're losing some economies of scale by having just one large contractor. But that's a legislative policy decision that municipalities are free to make when they create their lowest and best procurement system.
And let me ask you about that. The bidding documents are not specifically approved by city council. I mean, the procurement officer has delegated authority to develop those.
Chapter 321 of the city code identifies a non-exhaustive list of criteria that may be considered by the procurement agent. They're not exclusive, and she is free to satisfy multiple objectives. Here, this convention center expansion project came in both under budget and satisfied the 30% project-wide small business enterprise requirement that was imposed on the procurement agent by city council for this very large construction job.
Your position is that that the city procurement officer has the authority or discretion to disregard that part of the ordinance that says if you're going to apply the SBE requirement, there's still a limit. I forget what that was, 10% or so.
There are two positions as it relates to this case. One is that ordinance language is discretionary. It says that it may be applied by the procurement agent. The city procurement code defines may as permissive. It defines shall as imperative. City council used may, not shall. So the language itself on its face is discretionary. However, it's also discretionary whether she even chooses to rely on compliance with the Small Business Enterprise Program at all. She's not required to even consider that.
So, Council, basically what you're saying is that lowest and best is a moving target, and it's up to the city on any given project to be able to have flexibility to address what is best under those circumstances based on the needs in the construction project, et cetera.
That's exactly correct.
All right. If you would concede, for the sake of argument, that the directed verdict by the Court of Appeals will stand, what's your position on damages?
Well, damages is a more interesting issue. It's not a question of what this court has to do. It's rather what it can do and what it chooses to do. The United States Supreme Court has not dictated that this court disregard state law considerations when evaluating whether a party filing a procedural due process claim in Ohio can seek monetary damages. We talked about the Robertson case in the city's brief, which allows a federal civil rights claim to abate in Owen versus City of Independence, which the court should look at more closely than the city gave the case credit for in its brief. The Supreme Court allowed countervailing considerations. Those are the words of the U.S. Supreme Court. The court allowed countervailing considerations to be weighed in as part of the calculus for determining a suitable remedy for a litigant bringing a federal civil rights case in Ohio. And suitable remedy is the statutory language in 42 U.S.C. 1983. Congress is concerned about a litigant having a suitable remedy. Neither Congress nor the U.S. Supreme Court has mandated that monetary damages be available to a litigant. So this court...
There's no injunctive relief here.
There could have been injunctive relief. Cleveland Construction filed its lawsuit within weeks of the award to Valley, 4 weeks prior to the commencement of the drywall work at the convention center. They just did not pursue it. They filed it. They sought a TRO. It was denied. They waited a year until they renewed their request for a preliminary injunctive relief. I see I have 30 seconds left if I might reserve that for rebuttal. I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Gamelin. Mr. Lundgren.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and Associate Justices. May it please this honorable court, my name is Kelly Lundgren, and I have the privilege to represent the appellee Cleveland Construction Company in this case. The two issues that the court accepted for review were, first, whether Cleveland has a protected property interest under the U.S. Constitution, and secondly, whether or not Cleveland can pursue a damage remedy of lost profits for a constitutional deprivation of due process rights with regard to that contract. The answer to both of those questions is yes. Cleveland did have a property interest in this case because under the very narrow facts of this case, and they are narrow, the city didn't have any discretion to award to a bidder other than Cleveland on the basis upon which it moved forward to make the bid award. And Cleveland's entitled to seek damages of lost profits because this Cleveland's constitutional rights have been violated in this case, making this case much different than the Cement Tech case upon which the city is relying. Because under federal law, 42 U.S.C. section 1983, a damage remedy is mandated when a violation of federal constitutional rights is proven. The law governing the creation of constitutionally protected property interest looks to the state law and to local ordinances, like the ones that are in the one that is at issue here in this case, to determine the parameters of property interest and the delineation of those interests. And it is for that reason that, in fact, the Cincinnati Municipal Code, Chapter 32137, is relevant to the constitutional claim in this case. Because that's what, under the constitutional analysis set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court, you look to figure out whether a property interest has been created.
You claim that your property interest is due to the fact that you had the lowest bid. Is that correct?
That's one fact upon which we base that.
But you clearly did not meet the 35% requirement, correct?
We did not meet the 35%
subcontract. And the other company that was awarded it did not meet the $50,000 threshold, correct?
That's correct.
So why don't you two stand in equipoise in terms of your protected property right? Because neither of you fulfilled one of the terms of the bid requirements.
Well, Your Honor, because compliance with that percentage goal cannot be used as a basis for the bid award if the differential between the bidders is greater than $50,000. And that's what the city's
code
says. But
the same argument they would make is compliance with the 35% threshold is the same reason to find no compliance.
They make that argument, Your Honor, but their bid documents belie that fact. In fact, what the bid documents say is that good faith efforts will be determined. And the
bid documents also say may reject a claim if it's more than $50,000.
They do say that.
So you've got a discretionary on the 35%, and you've got a discretionary on the $50,000. How does that end up with either of the two bidders having a protected property right?
Well, Your Honor, the argument that we are making with regard to the $50,000 cap is that it is not discretionary. And in fact, if you read it to be
How do you read may as not discretionary?
You read it as being not discretionary because it says that the contract award may be made subject to the following limitation, that the contract award may not. And that's about as clear as it gets when you say may not. And to read the first may in the ordinance to make it absolutely discretionary is something that this court rejected in the Scandrick case.
And that same language doesn't exist as to the 35% may not be awarded if you don't meet 35%?
Well, it doesn't say may not be awarded. It says may not be considered. But we were considered, Your Honor, and we were found to be responsive. And that's the point here. Our bid was not rejected. We were listed on the city's compliant and responsive bids form as a bidder to be considered. And the city, it got through the qualification issue, found that we were perfectly qualified to do the job. It got through every other issue. And then it got to the point where it was going to award the contract on the basis of attainment of this SBE subcontracting outreach percentage. And when the city got to that point, it was bound, if that's the basis upon which it was going to award the contract, to follow its own code with regard to the restriction that it imposed upon itself, and that it told bidders in its bid documents that it would follow, creating a legitimate expectation in them that the city is going to abide by that restriction.
But I don't see anywhere in the documents where it says, okay, you have one contract that meets the 35%, but it's $1 million more. You have another contract that doesn't meet the 35%, but it's $1 million less. I don't see anything in the documents that says you can accept one over the other when both of them fail to meet the criteria.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think you can read the cap in 321.37, the monetary cap, as disqualifying a bidder for not meeting the 35% subcontracting outreach percentage anyway, because if you do that, it renders the otherwise qualified language in that section meaningless. Clearly, what the ordinance is talking about when it says otherwise qualified is qualified in some way other than meeting the 35% requirement.
So to meet your argument, we have to find that the 35% could be ignored and the 50,000 cap could not be.
Your Honor, the city's own documents say that the 35% is not a mandatory requirement. Now, the city's adopted...
My answer is that's your position.
That's our position, that it is the 35% subcontracting outreach quota was not a mandatory term. That is something that the city came up with after the lawsuit started, after the litigation started. If you look at the documents that the city promulgated to the bidders, it told them what the rules of the game are. They say that 35% threshold is not mandatory and that good faith efforts will be required. And if you look, and that really goes to the heart of this case, because if you look at the city's SBE program, which was adopted by ordinance and which does have the bid forms contained in an appendix in the back of it.
It was adopted by ordinance for this project, I understand. Is that right?
It was adopted by ordinance overall, Your Honor. And in the ordinances which adopted it, the city reflected the fact that they wanted it to apply to the Convention Center project, and they wanted to get it done in time for that. But if you look at the city's program documents, it provides for a very long, thorough analysis of a bidder's good faith effort. And the good faith effort, if you look at it, it's a good faith effort to discriminate. That's what it requires. There are no race-neutral numbers in this case. And if you look at the process that they set forth, that process requires notice to Cleveland, and it requires an opportunity to be heard on the issue of noncompliance. That process, like the city's municipal code cap, like the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, was thrown out the window by the city in this case. They ignored it like they ignored all the other legal restrictions on their discretion. In their discretion, I think it's important to point out, the city's discretion doesn't exist to allow it to violate constitutional rights. It doesn't exist to allow it to decide when it's going to follow its own code restrictions and when it's not. The city's discretion exists to allow the city to get the best contractor for the job at the best price. That was thrown out the window in this case, too.
But the issue before us is whether or not a property right is created. And following up on what Justice Stratton was asking about, if we assume that the city had to comply with its ordinance, limiting what it could give to somebody who wasn't the lowest bidder, that may mean that the one who got the contract got it improperly. But does that also mean that in Cleveland Contracting had a property interest, because the city reserves the right to reject all bids. So if they couldn't award it to your competitor, why does that mean that they had to award it to you when they could have simply rejected all of them then?
Exactly. That's Mr. Ganulin's argument. And the point is, again, Your Honor, the city can't reject all bids for any reason. And he's taking the argument.
It clearly says that in all their documents.
It says that, but of course, that is limited by the law. And I'm sure that Mr. Ganulin wouldn't sit up here and posit the argument that the city is entitled to reject bids because it wants to engage in racial discrimination. And if, in fact, that was the proffered reason for the rebid, and it wasn't because they didn't specify why they were rebidding the contract, but if it was, clearly the city doesn't have discretion to do that. So they don't have unlimited discretion. Their discretion is bounded by the Constitution and by the laws that they adopt to govern themselves. But your point, Your Honor, is a good one. Here's the answer to it. At the point that the city decided, the city's code is what makes the basis for the award relevant. If the city didn't talk about SBE having a limitation on the dollar amount they wanted to spend for it in its own code, it wouldn't matter, and they would have absolute discretion. It's the city that made its determination of the award being based on SBE compliance relevant to the bid process. And at the point that the city eliminated everything else and said, we're going to award because Valley met the SBE subcontracting outreach numbers and Cleveland did not. And if you look at Bernadine Franklin, the purchasing agent's testimony, she says the only factor between Cleveland and Valley was the SBE issue. Otherwise, Cleveland was the low bidder. And if you get to that point and the city decides we're going to award on that basis, you've got to make the award to the bidder that the code compels as a result. Because the code in this case absolutely foreclosed the city from being able to exceed the $50,000 number. And that's not an ambiguous test. That's a mathematical calculation. Council. All you had to do was look at the numbers and say, it's more money than we decided to spend. We can't do it.
Council, does your property interest arise then when they decide to award the contract in violation of their ordinances? Because it would seem they had another alternative, which is to reject them all again. Didn't they?
They did have that alternative for proper legal reasons.
And had they rejected them all again, you would have not had any claim.
Again, Your Honor, if we could prove that they rejected them to achieve the unconstitutional goals of the program, I think that would have been a limitation. But you're right.
Which unconstitutional goal would that be?
The 35%.
That's an unconstitutional goal?
Well, it is an unconstitutional
that's
goal.
That's not racial, is it?
It is racial. It is. Because the 30...
agree that issue wasn't before us.
I'm sorry?
I thought Breeze both said that issue is not before us.
The
SBE is a small business factor, not racial or gender, is it? Am I mistaken about that?
No, that's you are mistaken, Your Honor. That is not the case. And the equal protection violation is not before the court, but the SBE numbers are not race neutral. And the reason that they're not race neutral is because engrafted upon them is the requirement that a contractor discriminate in its selection of subcontractors to meet the 35%. And indeed, in this case, every subcontractor that Valley used to meet its subcontracting outreach percentage was also a minority contractor. So you can't say in any way, shape, or form that the SBE subcontracting outreach requirement is race neutral and non-discriminatory. It clearly is.
Council, you have to deal with the Comitech case because it requires that you seek injunction to mitigate your damages. And the opposing counsel says you did not seek an injunction for a year. Could you address that challenge?
Yes, Your Honor. We did seek an injunction. And that's simply, it's inaccurate. We came into court. First of all, we never got notice that the contract had been awarded. We ended up coming into court requesting a TRO, and at that point, like municipalities do under these circumstances, the city said, Your Honor, they're too late. We've already awarded the contract. Ironically, the trial judge, did not grant the TRO because he found that we had an adequate remedy at law under Section 1983 in damages, a position on which he later changed his mind. Subsequent to that, the city removed the case to federal court improperly. And if you look at, and it was remanded on our motion, if you look at the documents that were filed in the federal court proceeding, you will see that we filed, as soon as it was removed to federal court or very shortly thereafter, a motion for a preliminary injunction. And that the district court judge had set a schedule for discovery, because ironically, the city was requesting discovery on its own program, which was one of the reasons this all took so long. And we had that preliminary injunction pending at the time the district court sent this case back down to Hamilton County. When we were in Hamilton County, we had a scheduling conference before the court. The court decided it was going to consolidate everything in a hearing on the merits. The city was again requesting discovery.
Did you renew your motion for a preliminary injunction at that point?
We did. We did. But the trial court decided it wasn't going to have a separate hearing, that we were going to have one hearing on everything, on the merits. And then the city claimed that it needed discovery to do that, which took time. So we did pursue injunctive relief as diligently as we could. I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, I'll wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Lunderman.
Thank you.
Mr. Grandolin, you saved about 30 seconds of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. In the extreme, accepting Cleveland Construction's interpretation and application of the city code, the city might never be able to hire small business subcontractors. That's because Cleveland is, and the lower courts agreed, has converted the city's lowest and best bid procurement system into a lowest bid procurement system. In the extreme, Cleveland asks that low bids be accepted, notwithstanding the failure to comply with the legislative and administrative objective in the city of Cincinnati to promote the hiring of small business subcontractors. That's in the ordinance. That's a legislative finding at page 45 of Cleveland's supplement. That's the city ordinance.
Could you comment briefly on the underlying issue of race that I guess we didn't seem to understand as a part of?
The lower court rejected Cleveland's argument that the city of Cincinnati unconstitutionally relied on race or gender criteria in awarding this contract to Valley. That issue was rejected by the lower courts and not appealed by Cleveland Construction. So it's a bit unorthodox to re-inject it in the case at this point.
The trial court awarded attorney fees and costs.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're contesting that as well? That's really not before us.
Not before you at this time, that's correct. That's correct.
Because of the props that we accepted and did not accept.
The lower courts awarded fees based upon Cleveland Construction prevailing on its procedural due process claim, and it did get an injunction against the city's procurement system going forward, not as it applied to this drywall contract for the convention center expansion, but prospectively, it got an injunction on equal protection grounds. So it received fees for prevailing on both those issues. We're before this court on the procedural due process issue. We'll seek further review on the U.S. Supreme Court on the equal protection issue.
So Mr. Grandolin, procedurally, you are requesting us to do what?
Procedurally, reverse the lower court's rulings that Cleveland Construction had a constitutionally protected property interest in its bid for the convention center drywall job, the reason being you can't, under all these terms and conditions in the city code, in the bid itself, page 115 of the city's supplement says very clearly there's a 35% small business contracting requirement. Failure to meet this goal may cause a bid to be rejected as non-responsive. That was known to all the bidders. There can be no legitimate claim of entitlement. So you don't have to reach the damages issue. It becomes moot if the court agrees that Cleveland Construction did not have a constitutionally protected property interest under lowest and best bid.
Counsel, I think the argument, at least my understanding, is the city knew that they didn't comply, and yet they put them on the list for further consideration, even though they knew that they didn't comply with the 35%.
If you First of all, the city rejected all three bids originally.
Originally, but the second go-around.
Because none complied with the 35%. The second go-around, two complied with the 35% requirement. Cleveland did not. At pages 49, 52, 53, and 57 of the city's supplement, you'll see, again, that city reserved the right to reject bids that were not in compliance. The city marked as unacceptable Cleveland's bid for failing to satisfy that 35% requirement. So that's in the record in the city's supplement. And
at what point did they mark it unacceptable?
Prior to the award to Valley. I think it's dated February 24th.
Okay.
And it's in the supplement, in the record. And
they did mark it. Go ahead.
Was there notice to Cleveland about that? It seems to me there was some argument that they didn't really get any notice.
The record below on the actual process used by the city of Cincinnati for providing notice to prevailing bidders has not been developed. And in fact, the city gives written notice to the prevailing bidder, does not have a formal process for giving notice to unsuccessful bidders.
Which then prevents them from filing a protest.
Well, typically the city gets calls from the bidders, and in this instance, Cleveland expeditiously inquired and learned that it was not awarded the bid. It filed its lawsuit within weeks, which was still 4 weeks prior to the commencement of the drywall work.
Thank you, Mr. Ganulin. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.